Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sawbones, a Myrtle Tour of Misguided Medicine. I'm your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy. Are you sad, Justin? Why are you sighing like that?
Well, Sid, it's a tough day, isn't it?
It's a tough day?
It's a hard day. Today, May 11th, 2015, 16.
It's 16. It's definitely 2016.
16 marks the end. This is the end of the combo.
It was too much pressure, frankly, Justin.
The combo, friends, has seen us through. Let's just go through it one more time. What was the first one?
Great. Good. I'm glad we remembered
hemophilia?
That.
Hemophilia?
Hemophilia was the first one. Which led to, was that hydrogen peroxide?
Hydrogen peroxide. No.
Then ear wax and then ear aches. And then
yes, hemophilia, hydrogen peroxide, earwax, earaches, goofiest medical questions because we had a hard week, and then tinnitus continuing the combo. But now the combo is well and truly.
It was too much pressure, guys. It's kind of like, you know how, like, I'm sure, Justin, you can relate to this. You know how, like, you didn't get any B's all the way through school, and you were in your junior year of college and you still had never gotten a B, and you just kept thinking, like, oh my gosh, at some point in my life I'm gonna get a B and I'm gonna break my perfect streak of A's and then my whole world is gonna collapse.
Yeah, I think we've all had that exact line of thought with that exact level of intensity.
And then in your junior year of college, maybe you finally got that first B. Maybe it was your only B. Maybe that's anybody can ever say about you is that it was your only B, but maybe then you finally got it. And it was a little bit of a relief.
Yeah, I can understand. So
maybe you don't still think about it every night when you try to close your eyes.
This marks the end of the combo. What does that mean for us, Sydney? What are we turning to today?
Something totally bizarre.
Not you are looking very self-satisfied. Why are you looking so self-satisfied?
Because it's Bezoars, which sounds like bizarre.
Whoops-a-daisy. Okay, that's fine, I guess. That I'll allow it.
Bezoar. Or I think some people say Bezoar. Bezoar.
What is
Bezoars?
I have no idea. What's a Bezoar?
You don't know what they are? You've read Harry Potter. You know what they are.
Is that a Horcrux?
Nope. Not a Horcrux. Not a thing.
What
like
is
in
it?
Real life.
What is it?
Okay. So first of all, thank you, Corin, for recommending this topic. I think Bezoars are super cool and I'm really excited to talk about them. So I don't think anybody's going to be too mad that we broke our streak. They sound very magical, don't they?
Yeah. They have a kind of fantastical. I guess I could grant you that.
I would go ahead and posit that they are not magical.
Seems like a fair bet.
I would say that they are what many, many humans might refer to as gross.
But not magical.
No, but not me either. But then we've already established I have issues. So a bezoar is a collection of undigested or inedible material of some sort, some kind of material that is kind of found in a lump in the GI tract of either a human or an animal.
Like a hairball?
Yeah, a hairball is one example of a bezoar.
Oh, that is one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like a big mass, big lump of something that you can't digest or you probably shouldn't have eaten in the first place. And it's just sitting there, usually in your stomach, but it can be anywhere in the GI tract. And like I said, we can find it in humans or in any creature, really.
Is it a tumor?
No.
So how would you say that?
It's not a tumor, Justin.
One more time. Let's take another pass at that.
Really? Is this really?
Yeah,
really?
We're just going to need you to brighten up the A.
It's not a tumor.
It's kind of a dark A. Perfect. Okay.
Okay.
Love it.
So they can be named based on what's in them. So you mentioned a hairball.
Right.
We would probably call that a trichobezoar.
No, I think we'd probably call it a hairball, as we've established in the preceding 3 minutes of this program and also hundreds of years of human history.
Although, let me say this. Probably
would call it a hairball.
I don't know if like it distinguishes itself from a hairball in that like hairballs I usually find on the carpet after the cats have like hocked them up. And a trichobezoar, in theory, you wouldn't find on the carpet because it's still in the stomach.
Well, unless
so it's sort of like a meteor and a meteorite, you know?
Let's also get like super, super, super honest about hairballs. That's a very sweet name. It's vomit. It's hair vomit that they puked up all over everything.
Which is something different because some of that vomit may have been digestible.
Right. But it just got mixed up with the puke on the way out, I guess, because they had everything in there.
Yeah. There's also phytobezoars, which are made of...
Dogs?
No. What?
Phyto.
Okay. Yeah. No, P-H-Y, phyto.
Oh.
They're made of plant stuff.
Okay.
And then there's a trichophytobezoar. Can you guess that one?
I don't have a funny thing for that.
It's hair and plants. Both.
A little bit of everything.
There's also like lactobezoars, which are like milk, especially in like neonates that can't necessarily digest milk yet. And then there's pharmacobezoars, which are usually when people take too many of like sustained release pills, and all those like sustained release capsules kind of form this ball of undigested capsule pill material in the stomach.
Gross. Aroon. I didn't know that was a thing.
Yep. The word, though, it's like bezoar.
Those Dexatrim pills that have all the little... I used to love the look of... When I was a kid, I used to love pills that had, like, the tiny little pills inside of it. You know what I'm talking about?
Like, what?
You know,
pills that have pills inside of them?
Pills that have, like, tiny little... They're filled with, like, tiny little pills.
Did you do a lot of pills when you were a kid?
No, I just like the way they look. Like, Dexatrim, ironically, always used to make me hungry for candy.
You mean, like, capsules that are filled with the little dissolvable bits of material?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I guess I'm taking a little bit of license by saying they're tiny pills, but, I mean, they're tiny pills.
I don't think they're tiny pills. I mean, it's a pill.
Do you swallow them? Are they medicine? Are they small, solid objects?
Yeah, but by that definition, you can make nerds pills.
Are they medicine? Okay, that was the third. Sorry, Doc. Have nerds been medicine this whole time?
Okay, well, no, that's fair. I missed that criteria.
What a twist that was going to be.
I could use some nerds.
You're going to get your money's worth of this episode. Nerds are medicine.
The word...
Says a doctor.
The word bezoar comes from either the Arabic word Badzir or the Persian word panzir. Either way, these words refer to like an antidote or a counterpoison, which is really interesting.
That's odd.
Well, this is because we used to take these lumps or balls or collections of hair or husk or vegetable matter or whatever, some sort of matter, and we would give them to people to ingest as cures for poisoning. Like, for a really long time in history, we did this.
Gross.
So, yeah. So, I'm going to tell you about this. We have found bezoars in animals for a really long time, and we didn't quite know what to make of them initially. This is probably just by, like, the fact that we were killing and eating animals, and or animals died, and we would just find these odd things kind of hanging around afterwards. There were theories... Like, really strange theories that I read initially of, like, where could these have come from? Which especially is strange when you consider that they were probably often found inside a stomach. Mm-hmm. But I guess these weren't necessarily. Because one theory is that, like, maybe if a deer ate a snake and then that deer got stuck in some muddy water. And so as it was, like, sinking into the muddy water and dying, it started crying. And then those tears of this deer that ate the snake that's sinking into the muddy water became bezoars.
Okay.
Which I just keep picturing that scene from Neverending Story.
Oh, with a
Atreyu and Artax and ugh,
heartbreaking.
I know, but I
was traumatized by that.
It was rough. Theaters.
That was rough. I was just a little kid.
It's okay at the end though. Okay. It's all okay. Don't worry. But in this situation, the deer would cry and the tears would become bezoars, which seems a little more far fetched than we found this lump of hair in a stomach.
Yeah. But who wants to tell that story?
They also thought it may be just the animal's natural defense against poisoning.
It'd catch it up in a ball of hair.
Exactly. So like they find these balls of stuff and they're like, ah, this is all the poison the animal ingested, which is just now all stuck in this ball. And so it didn't die. It died for another reason, because we killed it and ate it.
Right. Delicious. Mm-hmm. Pass the more animal, please.
We find mention of the term, the word bezoar, when we go all the way back to our buddy Pliny's time, Pliny the Elder. But it's fair to say that even when he talks about bezoars, he only does so in referencing what he calls the Persian word. So he's already saying, like, this isn't something from my medical tradition or something I really understand or know much about. I'm just kind of stealing this from, like, the Arabic tradition of medicine. Okay. We know that the use of bezoars for medicine dates back to at least the 1100s.
Okay.
And by the 1200s, it'd become pretty widespread. Mainly the kind of bezoars that you might use for medicine. I'm going to tell you some of the uses, mainly counter poisons, but there's some other things they were used for too. The ones that were highly prized were taken from cows and goats, usually, that started throughout Asia and then spread over. And by the 1200s, most of Europe was also trying this out as well. And the way that you could use them, and they would be called bezoars or bezoar stones, and you could either put them into a glass of like water or wine and then just drink the liquid. But that really wasn't thought to be as effective as either like scraping it and dissolving it into some liquid and drinking it.
Yeah.
Or I guess just swallowing the whole thing in the worst case scenario.
What a wonderful example of really using every part of the buffalo. I mean, literally, I guess in this case, but really just not want to let anything go to waste, huh?
Well, we did really great, Bob. Anything left over there?
Well, there's a chunk of hair. There's a big ball of hair. Undigested hair.
Yeah, no, that's for poison. That's for
medicine.
Poison.
That's medicine.
That's grab a medicine it. Right there.
You grab it. I don't want to grab it. I've grabbed so many.
And put it in this leather sack, and I'll carry it around on my hip. That won't freak people out. I know how to make friends. It was also used during plague times for treatment of plague victims, and that also made it more widespread and more popular, as well as for envenomations. So like if a snake or something bit you,
oh, okay,
you may be told like, just get a bezoar, you know, go find a bezoar.
Why?
Like I said, part of the theory was that it was the animal's natural defense against poisoning, and then they would look at some of the foods. Like one of the things we're going to talk a little bit about are porcupine bezoars, and part of the theory as to why porcupine bezoars would eventually become so highly prized was because porcupines ate a lot of like really bitter food and a lot of like tough plants that humans wouldn't want to eat. And so the thought was like, if they can eat that, they must have
in their hair, in their stomach really hairballs.
Yeah, their stomach hairballs must be really tough.
Sure.
And so they're really good at counteracting poisons.
All right, humans. I'm sorry. I'm not seeing where you're coming from on this one.
The use of these was spread a huge amount through the Crusades, but also by trade routes, because these became very popular items for trading. They were very expensive.
Sure, they're shelf stable, which is nice.
Yeah, and they weren't easy necessarily to find. Mm-hmm. So you would pay a pretty penny if you wanted a bezoar, and they were highly prized by the courts of Europe. And so this was definitely something, you know, if you were a noble, this was something a king or a queen would want easily at their disposal, you know, that if you were a well-to-do medicine man at the time, you would probably want to have these in your arsenal to cater to your richer clients for sure. Yeah. And as a result of this, like with anything else, fake bezoars started appearing on the market.
I was actually just sitting here wondering why more people weren't doing that. They don't work anyway. So like, what's the difference?
No, exactly. And because of the kinds of materials they're made of, you could imagine they were really easy to fake.
Yeah, of course.
It's just like hair and straw and vegetable stuff and whatever. And you just kind of mash it into a ball and
done.
There you go.
Yeah.
You got a bezoar. And you're right. Since they weren't going to work, Who knew anything?
Who's going to catch you? Yeah.
So you begin to find, like, at this point in time, like, bezoar experts popping up here and there who, like, could describe to you what a real bezoar from various animals looked like. For instance, like, if you were going to get a real bezoar from a goat, it should be aubergine.
Okay. Now, why is that?
That's just the color that goat bezoars should be.
All right. Okay.
So there you go. So if somebody tells you it's a goat bezoar and it's not aubergine, you should be suspicious.
Yeah. I'll try to keep that in mind.
They were used a lot, too, in medicine. If you look at a lot of the recipes and kind of like potions or whatever for bezoars at this point in history, you'll see that they're paired with unicorn horns, which gave me a huge pause because I was like, yeah. Is all of this made up then? Hold on. I've been reading all of these accounts of bezoars and now we're mentioning unicorn horns. And so like I'm thinking like this is all fiction. I've been tricked.
It's been a Pierce Anthony book this whole time. But I think a lot of people probably get confused occasionally as to whether or not unicorns are real. Like they realize that they're not, but like they don't instantly remember that they're not. You know what I mean? Sometimes it takes them a little while.
Would you say that's a personal problem, Justin?
You know that moment between sleep and awake when you can still remember your dreams?
Yeah, it's the moment that I sit and wonder about that 1B that I got in college.
Yeah.
Unicorn horns were probably goat horns.
Oh, okay.
Just so you know.
Just taped on there.
And I think people knew. Like, I don't think this was like a mass, like, delusion. Like, oh, get that horn off that goat. It's a unicorn horn all of a sudden. Like, yeah. I mean, I think people knew. In India, they had other uses as well as, like I said, for counter poisons and antidotes, which is, by the way, I should mention that is part of why they were so popular among royalty. Mm-hmm. Is because they were
poisoning.
Yeah, they were trying to off each other all the time, right?
Yeah, and Game of Thrones.
I was going to say, that's what Game of Thrones is all about, I think.
Yeah, constantly.
Probably that and dragons and winter. Mm-hmm. That's
yeah,
the whole
all
show.
You got all the big points.
Are there bezoars in it?
Not that I've seen, but maybe behind the scenes or deleted scenes, you know.
Because if any of them are getting poisoned, they should probably just have some bezoars.
I mean, they probably shouldn't because they're fake and don't work. So it's kind of their own discretion, I guess.
In India, they also use them for depression or any kind of melancholic disorder. You could use it like a bezoar. If you had bleeding problems, you may be prescribed a bezoar. Fevers. And they would often be used even almost like a tonic or like a preventive measure, like for vigor. Rich people would often just dissolve one in a drink like twice a year, like to take their like biannual tonic.
Not something I'd look forward to.
Of bezoar. It was sort of like a flu shot almost. Yeah. Like, it's winter. Did you drink your bezoar yet? except afterwards you puked a lot.
Sure.
Which is not at all like a flu shot.
No.
One, as I mentioned, the porcupine bezoar became very popular at this time and was very highly prized. It was described as, because you need to know, right? You need to know what it looks like so you don't get tricked.
Yeah, you don't want to get a scam run on you.
A porcupine bezoar would be small, vermilion, clear. It would have a very bitter taste and it would feel in your hand, much like French soap. Not just any soap.
French soap. Maybe French soap was made out of porcupine bezoars this whole time. It'd be new.
Hey.
Hey. What's up, History's Greatest Mysteries Unearthed?
When we're done, let's call France and ask.
Okay.
And this one was thought to be a very potent healing agent, and it was especially good for the stomach, strangely enough.
So do these work? Do they work?
Well, okay. There's a little bit to that.
Just a little. Oh, my gosh.
Just a little. I'm not saying they work, but before I tell you all the details, why don't you follow me to the billing department?
Let's go. The medicines that escalate macabre for the mouth. Okay, you were telling me that there may be some sort of slight grain of truth here.
So before I tell you the slight grain of truth, let me tell you when they finally started to kind of fall out of favor.
Okay.
When we realized that all of the claims were probably not true.
Probably took us too long, I'm betting, but hit me.
We've talked about Dr. Perret from about the 1500s, who was a groundbreaking physician from France and a surgeon, and we've discussed him in past episodes. Mm-hmm. One of the things...
Ambrose?
Yeah, exactly. Very good. We'll keep working on Embrol? Our French, and by the time we're done with this podcast someday,
okay,
we'll know how to say his name appropriately.
I'm going to Google it. You keep talking.
I say it different every time. I think I'm always wrong. I do practice. So he disproved this with an experiment that I would wager would not pass IRB muster today, which means like it wouldn't be allowed to happen. So in the 1500s, there was a cook in the king's court who was found to be stealing silver. And as was the fashion of the time, if you are stealing things from the king, you get sentenced to death.
Right. Can't have that sort of thing.
Exactly. So he was supposed to be killed by hanging. However, Dr. Perret interceded on his behalf and said, hey, listen, well, maybe not so much on his behalf, more on like medicine's behalf, said, hey, listen, this looks like a great opportunity for us to test out a theory. Instead of him choosing, let's give him the option. Either we'll just go ahead and hang you, or instead we will give you poison and then you'll swallow a bezoar. And we'll see if you live.
Oh, that's so good.
And if you live, you get to live. You're done. Like, you walk away scot-free. You probably don't get to still work for the king because, like, you stole the silver. But, like, you live. That's fine. Or you just, you know, you get to hang. Either way.
Either way.
So, this guy went for the poison in the bezoar.
Double or nothing.
Because, I mean, who wouldn't?
Yeah.
And he lived 7 hours.
Hey, that's something. Better than hanging, I guess.
I don't know what poison it was. I don't know any details.
Yeah, not a lot of poisons are like chill.
They're not like, most of them aren't fun poisons.
Not fun poisons, not chill poisons. By the way, I said Ambroise.
Ambroise.
That's what Google says.
Okay. We'll try to get it right from now on. Anyway, that should have put the theory to bed once and for all. Of course, like always.
Of course not. Why let facts get in the way?
That didn't stop anyone. They were still being used in the 1600s when there's a really interesting court case that kind of involved a bezoar. So in 1603, there was a case, Chandelier v. Lopas, which was a famous like British common law case that's referenced because it established the rule of caveat emptor.
Oh, okay.
Or, you know what that means?
Buyer beware.
Exactly. Thank you. I was going to let you have that one.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Leave the low-hanging fruit for the village simpleton. I
appreciate it. The story is that there was a man who went to a store or, I don't know, a tent somewhere, whatever, wherever people buy bezoars, and he bought one, and he was told that it was from an animal stomach. Probably. The guy was like, yeah, I'm pretty sure this is a real deal bezoar. Yeah. He paid £100 for it. I found that several sources documented £100, which at the time is crazy
money. That's like a lot of money.
That's crazy money back
then.
That's
wild.
So he paid £100 for this bezoar. It didn't work as promised. Now, I wish I had the details of this because I don't know what happened that he figured out it didn't work. It's lost to history. I don't think anybody knows for sure, but something happened. He came back and said, listen, this was fake. It's not a real bezoar. I want my money back. They ended up in court and buyer beware became the law of the land.
Where we went wrong. What a lot of natural medicine dealers and non-traditional medicine dealers have learned is that if you make your prices low enough that people can just write it off as some harmless fun, you can skirt a lot of heavy investigation that way for a good long while. You can't charge as much for a bezoar and expect to stay in business.
How much do you sell your bezoars for, honey?
Me? $24.99. Absolutely. And your satisfaction, by the way, Sydney, is guaranteed.
Do you find that's the prize that people are like, yeah, that's fine. I'll let it pass. Fine,
whatever. $25 is like I think that's what you should charge for any fake thing. It's it's a good amount of money because if you got $25, like, yeah, cool, I love it. But if you lost $25 to a scam, you're not gonna go to like the police. Not for that. It's not worth it. You know.
I don't know. The $25 is a lot of nerds.
Yeah, no kidding. Like, absolutely.
So in the 1600s as well, we see the introduction of by a Dr. Semedo, who was a Portuguese physician, who, like, by the way, I want to give him a little credit because he introduced quinine for malaria to Portugal. So, like, cool. Good.
That one's good.
Good job. He also made, like, a cordial out of bezoar stones, which I just like to mention because I love the idea of like a bottle of cordial.
Yeah.
Because cordial always sounds very fancy and like something sweet and syrupy and like yummy. And I mean, it's what like Mary Poppins gave her
she has charges, lime cordial, right?
I don't know. Yeah. I guess she has lime cordial.
That's her flavor.
So that's what she said. No, she had rum punch.
Rum punch. Yeah. Michael got lime
she
cordial.
Rolled her tongue. Rum punch. Like that. Yeah.
We've watched Mary Poppins 40 times. Our baby loves it.
In the 1700s, because of all the sketchy fake bezoars that were out there that could have been made of anything and maybe something dangerous, the Portuguese Jesuits actually started to make their own fake stones, except for, let's not call them fake now, they're artificial.
Okay.
So, you know, there aren't enough naturally occurring bezoars to go around.
We got to cook some up.
We will make some artificial ones. And this is totally like, they were not lying about this. We are making artificial bezoars that should work just like bezoars. But
and it was, to their credit, they did, I'm sure.
So they were made out of all kinds of things. They were made out of amber and musk and rubies and emeralds and like fancy things like topaz and ivory and garnet and coral. Also, though, dirt and also some unicorn horn and also some stag horn.
Right.
Then, like I said, this was an honest effort to try to limit the dangerous fake stones that were out there that might make people sick. They called them the Goa stone. And Goa stones actually became as highly prized as real deal bezoars after a while.
Yeah, because these dumb monks are stuffing them with gemstones.
This continued until about the 1800s when we finally started to see bezoars fall out of favor. And though you could still buy them, the kind of craze, there was enough, you know, people believed enough by then that like, hey, we keep taking these things. People keep dying of poisoning. I don't think they're working. Interestingly, I will say this, just some real things about bezoars. One, they do kind of bind arsenic.
Huh.
Especially depending on what kinds, the ones made of hair in particular. There's been some studies done that say, yeah, they may work a little bit on arsenic. Now, I don't know how
That's
much.
Ridiculous, Sydney.
It's just that it has to do with exactly the chemical reactions that occur between the molecules, like in the hairball. And in the arsenic. But
that's so wild.
Anyway, so they may a little bit. Now, I don't think I'd want to chance this. I don't think I'd want to bet my life on, you know.
If you have a bezoar and nothing, and then you get arsenic poisoning, it's probably worth a shot. But otherwise.
Sure. Some other interesting bezoar facts. Unripened persimmons have caused epidemics of bezoars before.
Among humans,
yes. Wow. So you got to be really careful. Apparently, don't eat unripened persimmons. And there's even a name for that. It's a diospero bezoar.
I don't think I've ever eaten persimmon, period. So unripened persimmons are not a big risk factor for me.
Ooh, or maybe they are because you'd have no way of knowing if they were ripe.
I'm just saying I don't eat them. Never seen them. Don't think it's a problem.
So make sure your persimmons are ripe. Another kind of interesting fact, a trichobezoar, so one made of hair, can lead to something called Rapunzel syndrome, which is not as, you know, enchanted as it sounds.
No.
This is actually something I've seen before. In patients who have trichotillomania,
meaning
which means that they pull their hair out. They upset. Well, all this means is that they pull the hair out.
Okay.
Trichotillomania means that you obsessively pull your hair out. Now some of those patients also eat that hair, not all, but some do. And then you can get, you know, a big bezoar, a trichobezoar of hair in your stomach. And then if it leaves like a trail of hair that snakes all the way through the intestines from that ball of hair in the stomach, that's called Rapunzel syndrome.
Oh, okay.
And often, unfortunately, I should say, a lot of these cases end up needing surgery.
Mm.
To kind of get this big blockage of undigestible serious. Material out. Right. Well, and if it's blocking your intestines or causing you pain and nothing can move around it, you know, it can eventually even perforate or cause a hole in the intestines. So you can still find bezoars sold, like as well as fake bezoars and animal bezoars and all these different bezoars in some parts of the world. Again, as like almost like a supplement.
Just a little something extra.
Yeah. Almost in this. I mean, I don't know. I've never checked like our local like health food,
I'm betting no.
Vitamin stores.
Bet no, but possible.
But, you know, as we have discussed before, these probably work just as well as a lot of those supplement, vitamin health food and things. Listen, folks, so.
P.O. Box 5400, West Virginia 25706. Our 10th anniversary is just around the corner this July 1st. So hit us up with all your bezoars you can find. Please don't send bezoars.
Please, especially don't send us homemade bezoars.
Yeah, super don't do that.
You can still see them, by the way, in pieces of art from ancient times. You can find pieces of art that have bezoars in the middle of them because they were so highly prized. Mm-hmm. And like I said, they are a big deal when they happen in humans. Sometimes you can dissolve them with soda, but other times they need surgery. So they are a pretty big deal. And of course, because I haven't said it yet, and I know everybody, there are certain people who are listening and going, you haven't. Harry saved Ron's life with a bezoar when he drank that poison mead. Don't forget that.
I'll never forget.
Don't forget that.
Thanks to the taxpayers for letting us use their song Medicines as the intro and outro of our program. Big, exciting, cool news for us if you live in or around Washington, D.C. or New York City. We are coming there with my brother and me, and another podcast in D.C. It's Schmanners in New York. It's City's podcast, Still Buffering. That is going to be June 3rd in Washington, D.C., June 4th at the PlayStation Theater in New York City. The D.C. venue is Lincoln Theater, Lincoln Center, something like that. Not Lincoln Center, I think Lincoln Hall, Lincoln Theater.
Lincoln Theater, I think.
You can get tickets to those by going to bit.ly/MBMBAM and then either NYC 2016 or DC 2016. So those tickets will actually go on sale this Friday at noon EST. So don't sleep on that. Our shows tend to sell out, and we would love to see you if you're in the area. So that address again, bit.ly/MBMBAM, NYC 2016 or DC 2016, depending on what show you want to get tickets to. There's probably links on our Twitter and Facebook and whatever.
Yeah, there definitely are. So please, if you can come out, it'll be really fun.
Three podcasts. It'll be a hoot and a half. Is that it? MaximumFun.org is a place for lots of other podcasts. You can go check them all totally out.
Podcasts. Check them out.
Check them out.
Doesn't work as well.
No, that's good. But that's going to do it for us, folks. Until next Wednesday, my name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.